Okay, I'm here in lovely South Florida, Pembroke Pines, to be precise, with my grandmother, Clara.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
How are you doing, Clara?
Very good in your company now.
Oh, it's good to be in your company.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're talking about movies, and you said you had some favorite movies. Clara's picks.
Yes. One of them is What a Wonderful Life,
mm-hmm.
with James Stewart and yeah. Donna Reed. This is one.
Yeah.
The other one, a romantic one, is Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
Audrey Hepburn and William Holden and Humphrey Bogart. And Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Cherbourg, yes, with Catherine Deneuve.
Right.
It's a very nice music by Michel Legrand.
I have here, it's a classic. It has 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It looks like a great film.
Yes, I love it.
So none of these movies are science fiction movies?
No.
Do you think aliens exist?
I don't think so.
No aliens are out there, anywhere?
I don't think so. I don't see them, so I cannot. I cannot.
But space is so big.
Yeah, can be that something is there, but...
Okay, so maybe aliens.
Maybe.
Okay, what about ghosts?
Ghosts?
You think ghosts are real?
No.
Okay.
You think that ghosts are...
No, I don't think so. But I don't know. It's maybe.
Yeah. This is true.
That's spooky
maybe
science.
Everything is maybe, because if we don't see it, we don't know.
Okay. But what about love? We don't see love, but we know.
You feel it.
Yeah.
Sometimes so this you know.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to tell them enjoy the show?
Of course, enjoy the show if you have to like Ethan, because he's the best, one of the best grandson that I have, and I have a lot of them.
I'm just one of the best? I'm not the best grandson?
I cannot say that.
Okay, yeah.
Because I have a lot of.
Okay, but I'm one of the best. I'm in the top half. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay,
of
all right.
Course.
You heard it here, guys. You're listening to a show with one of the best grandchildren that Clara has.
Yes.
Okay.
And I love you with all my heart.
I love you too, Clara.
I know.
Science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Bad science.
Welcome to Bad Science, everybody. I, as always, am your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I am so excited here to talk about Limitless, one of the greatest films of all time. Of course, I'm just kidding. We'll get back to that in a second. But I want to introduce my guests here from one of my favorite podcasts, The Great Debates. We have Dave King.
What's up?
Writer, producer, I mean, love on Netflix, mm-hmm. The Simpsons, Parks and Rec, Workaholics.
Mm.
Thanks for being here, Dave.
Oh, happy to be here. Happy to talk about Limitless.
And... your good friend, both from Needham, is that correct?
Yeah.
Needham, Massachusetts. Right. We have Steve Healy, a writer-producer. He works on Veep, 30 Rock. He worked on The Office, and you've put out 4 novels, if I'm not mistaken. Is that
one novel.
Oh.
A couple travel books.
Oh.
I put out enough.
An auteur.
There's plenty of me out there.
Okay. Steve Healy, everybody. Steve, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks
as well.
Thanks for having us. A pleasure.
It's unbelievable, guys. And of course, we will make them debate later on. I'm sure everybody's, you know, just asking for that right now.
Everyone.
But we're not going to jump right into that just yet. I've got to introduce our scientists. We have behavioral neuropharmacologist, Dr. Tegan Wall.
How's it going?
It's going great. I'm sorry we don't have an audience that just bursts into applause when I announce.
Wall! Tegan!
Build the wall!
Oh, no.
Oh, it got political so early.
It's okay.
Okay, so Limitless, guys. Yeah. This was your suggestion, Tegan, not to throw you under the
bus. It's like the number one movie my mom's friends ask me about.
Really?
Here I do like neuropharmacology and they're like, so, smart drugs.
So, you've met Bradley Cooper.
Basically.
Okay. What did you guys think of the movie? Did you suggest it because you love Limitless?
I don't love Limitless, okay. But in terms of movies about people who get smarter, it's not one of the worst ones.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
That's probably true. I take that.
That's what should be on their poster. Maybe. Like, when you queue it up on Netflix.
Like, at least we're not Lucy.
Yeah. Oh, is Lucy bad? I haven't seen Lucy.
I haven't seen that either.
Lucy was
physically
sort of a she Limitless. Was that right?
Yeah, only worse.
In what way?
Oh, my favorite part is the when they tried to fix it in editing, and instead you just have like scenes where she's wearing one outfit, and then she's wearing a different outfit in the next scene, and then she's to the other outfit in the next scene.
Got away from them continuity-wise.
Just a little bit.
Needed a little more smart pills in the editing.
The costume department.
Yeah.
Well, who's to say? Who's to blame?
Who's to say?
What did you guys think of the film? You guys just watched it, right?
I just watched it last night.
Yeah, first time watching. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like... It's a movie. Like, it's not amazing. It's definitely not great, but I didn't think it was terrible. Mm-hmm. It's got movie stars. It's got action sequences. Like, it held my interest, even though I didn't think it was particularly great.
Okay.
It annoyed me at times, but also, my ultimate takeaway of the movie was, like, I forget if we were talking about this already, but, like, this was the ultimate test of, like, not ultimate test, but this is... A test of Bradley Cooper as a movie star.
Yeah, that'll agree.
Because it's not the best story or whatever, but like, I kind of kept watching just because of him.
Yeah, he carried the film.
He
kind of
carries the film, and he's just gorgeous, and he's very good, I think, at doing this.
It's nice that smart drugs make you prettier, too. Like, every time it kicks
glowing,
in, he's got
crazy.
That, like, Snapchat face looks great.
I was fine with that. Yeah. I was fine with all of that. And okay. So, you know, it's not... I'm... Whatever.
Okay, so
glad
so far,
it's over.
Two out of two... positive reviews.
Here's my review.
It seems like you both enjoyed it, is all I'm saying.
I'm just saying, like, if I'm on a flight to Australia and it's one of the options, it will be one of the five movies I watch.
Got it.
Yes, great plane flight.
Yeah. As I was watching it, and even now, I'm not sure whether I had seen it before. I think that I'd seen probably 40% of it before. Okay. Now I've definitely seen all of it. But you know what? It's like, if I saw it on a flight to Australia... I've seen this one. I know what happens. I can ride along. Mm-hmm. It's like burned in there. Yeah. Limitless is part of my movies to get you to Australia.
There you go.
So,
for me, I love movies, and I kind of relate with what you're saying, Dave, because I just, you know, I watch a lot of these movies for the pod and think, I'm going into this, no expectations, you know, let me just enjoy it. And I do, for the most part, I really do.
Right.
I watched this movie last night. 9:45 p.m. I started by myself. Mm. Really did not enjoy this film from the get-go. The credits, I hated a lot of people.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
They made
man.
Me really dizzy.
Yes.
Could not stand the opening, like warp. And they use it a few times
really
in the movie where you're kind of warping forward.
Oh. I had to look away.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Could not stand that effect. And really just, and again, listen, I know I've said this before in the pod. Like, I'm a schmuck. I don't make films for a living. You know, this guy, Neil Berger, has done a bunch of, he did The Illusionist, which I like.
Oh,
I like The Illusionist. But in general, did not like this film. I had had so many problems for me, and I want to go over some of them here with you guys.
It's got problems.
Okay.
It's not good.
So I don't want to just, like, complain, but I want to see...
I feel backed into a wall where I'm going to end up being the limitless public defender.
No,
that's great.
I'll support the film. I'll back up the film.
Okay.
There's certain parts of the film that I really, really like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear that stuff, because for me, all that is highlighted in my brain is these terrible parts that could have been easily solved.
I gotta say, the opening credits that you guys are complaining about, I felt like establishes perfectly where you're at with this film.
That's
this
true.
Is like, it's not amazing. It's not great. They didn't have all the money in the world, but they made something that's supposed to be kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Have fun.
And
come
speaking
on.
Of that, they made a ton of money.
They set the terms
with this
movie,
which was crazy to me. I looked it up and I thought, like, oh, maybe it made a few million dollars. It made $150 million. Dollars.
Was it literally limitless at the box office?
No, he just said
it says infinite.
He just said 100 was like 100 something. But it was enough.
Sorry.
It was enough to make a TV show. They were like, we got to make a TV show out of this.
Yeah. Well, because the idea is very, addictive,
it's
right?
Fun.
There's something about just that log line that you're like, oh, you can use 100% of your brain. I want to know what happens on that. But I think the execution of that fell short so hard, and I'm not a movie critic or whatever.
I will actually say, though, that's one of my favorite parts science-wise in the movie is the whole, you know how scientists say you only use 20% of your brain? Mm-hmm. That only comes up once in the movie, and it comes up from like the least reliable source, who's just talking out of his ass.
The ex-brother-in-law.
Right.
And the fact is, for the record,
a badly damaged former drug dealer.
Right. Yes. You use 100% of your brain.
Of course.
Like, if you didn't...
Let's get that straight right now.
You use 100% of your brain.
How
if you used
that...
it all at once, you would have a grand mal seizure and die.
That should have been the movie.
Takes a pill and dies right away.
He seizes first in front of his landlord's wife.
How did this become an oft-quoted falsehood?
Oh, yeah, that's
because,
a good question.
Because, like, this is the same thing as in defending your life where, I don't know if you remember this, but they're like the people who, I forget what you call them, but it's like basically purgatory, and like the judges and the people who live in purgatory are like, it's like Rip Torn, and he's like, I use 98% of my brain, that's clocked or whatever, and like the average human only uses 12% or something.
Yeah. Did that start, you think, somewhere?
There's two different places that we think it started.
Great.
The first is they did a whole bunch of experiments mostly with animals, but also looking at people who sustained injuries not during these experiments.
Okay.
Where, like, they would just remove a part of a mouse's brain and be like, okay, mouse, do stuff.
Now what?
And if the...
Not so smart now, are you?
If the piece was small enough, like, 90% of the time, the mouse was still pretty normal.
Right.
Now, these were really small pieces, and your brain is really good at having, like, redundant systems built in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that that piece wasn't doing anything. It's just that it wasn't absolutely necessary for the mouse to, like, run on a wheel.
Okay.
And same with people. You have stories of people getting traumatic brain injuries, and you're like, well, they're still people. And Phineas Gage is a great example. I'm really impressed by that, by the way.
So I was a psych major.
So
I had that
Dave,
ready
by
to
the
go.
Way. Very impressed with himself.
Phineas Gage had a railroad spike blown up through his face, behind his face, and into his frontal lobe.
Okay.
And he lived, and he, like, there's pictures of him, like, hanging out with the railroad spike.
Yeah.
But he became a total asshole.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, I want to, can we drill in a bit on this story?
Yeah,
I too
no pun intended.
Looked into the Phineas Gage literature.
Yeah.
And always what I'm stuck on is like, yes, I would be an asshole too if a railway spike up.
Right.
The railroad probably screwed him. It's not like he was like got a $100 million settlement. Like, he was probably pissed as hell about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
How seriously can we take the science that he then became an asshole?
It may have had little to do with his change in, like, neurochemistry.
Yeah, he was like, god damn it! And people are like, this frontal lobe of the brain.
This is supported by recent research like MRIs or some really extraordinary studies with sociopaths.
Oh, right.
Who were, like, on death row.
Yeah.
Versus people who are not sociopaths, who are just neurotypical people living their lives.
Now, how much science are you allowed to do with the guys on death row?
They volunteer for everything. Yeah,
we could do all kinds of
stuff,
right?
Yeah, okay. The big thing is you're still not allowed to, like, damage them. Like, there's still ethical concerns with hurting a human being.
He's got to be 100% there.
Even if he's okay with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if they sign a thing that says, like, oh, yeah, there's a risk that you could, you know, have brain damage, whatever.
Yeah, I think in some ways they're almost considered like a protected class. Because you don't want to be...
They have more rights than us.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to be coercing them with the fact that they're... Mm. Like, you could literally coerce these guys with a chicken nugget, right?
Right.
You'd be like, your life is the worst a life could be right now, and also we're going to murder you. Do you want to take this experimental drug for a chicken nugget? And they'd be like, why not?
Yeah. How often do you offer people chicken nuggets for studies? Seems like a weird way to coerce someone.
I mean, if you're doing a study on, like, chicken nuggets, it's the way to go.
You get one nugget for each nugget-sized amount of your brain.
That
was to deal with the mice. That's to deal with people.
Yeah, so always.
That's how it works.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great.
How many nuggets, roughly size-wise, is the human brain?
That's a great question. It's like a carnival guessing game.
35? I don't know.
So the human brain's about 3 pounds.
Okay. Okay.
So how many ounces is a nugget?
Well, would we say that the brain is roughly as dense as?
You wouldn't. So the brain is a lot of water and a lot of fat.
So it's heavier or denser than a McNugget. Probably.
What's the density of a McNugget?
Oh, I used to know this.
I think if you took a McNugget and you like soaked it in water overnight, like that would be about the consistency and density.
Yeah, you really should. Yeah. I would say like my guess is 30 nuggets. In terms of size.
Yeah, I'm saying 30.
That's a good guess.
If you clump 30 nuggets together, I don't know, maybe more.
That's why at McDonald's when you order 30 nuggets, they often go, "It's a brain."
Get him a brain.
Yeah.
Depends on the brand.
Regionally, yeah. In Vermont, they say get us a gauge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's right.
Okay, let's backstep from nuggets to limitless.
No, hold on, actually, Ethan.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. Get us back on track.
You have some McDonald's neuropharmacology you'd like to discuss? Okay, so I thought just that it was kind of funny that his hair was kind of a symbol for, like, intelligence, because that happens in other movies, too, where, like, he has really long hair when he's, like, a creative.
Right.
But then as the movie goes on, he has, like, shorter and shorter hair.
Well, it's absurd that, like, the second time he takes the drug, he's, like, walking past, like, as the drug kicks in, he, like, looks over at a barbershop or whatever, and he's like, it's basically him going, like, I should get my hair cut.
Right.
And then he gets, like, tailored suits, and it's like a makeover montage.
Yeah, it's a strange, like,
like, he didn't
some
think
decisions.
To cut his hair.
That was his brain saying, make me look nice.
Yeah.
Same thing with his apartment. They, like, automatically, he wanted to clean.
He cleans his apartment. That's, like, the first thing he does.
Yep.
And kind of slowly, it's not, like.
He takes, at one point, one of his, because he's, like, replicating or whatever. There's, like, a few of him around. Right. And one of his just sits on the couch, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes, yeah.
It's like, I need a break.
Though, I never clean as much. My apartment is never as clean as when I have a writing deadline.
Sure.
I hear tales of people taking speed and immediately cleaning up, like, entire buildings and stuff, right? It's a common side effect of what, like, Adderall-y type stuff.
Well, and Adderall is, like, the main smart drug that we have right now. Like, there's a reason people take Adderall to do their homework.
Okay.
Gotcha. Oh. I still have never done Adderall. Have you guys tried Adderall?
I've never had Adderall, per se.
What the hell does that mean?
There you go.
So, I have sleep apnea.
Okay.
So, I have a prescription for Nuvigil, which is like a stay awake drug. It's not at all supposed to be like Adderall.
It's like modafinil?
I believe it's in the same class. Provigil, it's in the same class of drugs.
So, I have a sleep disorder and I take modafinil.
Okay. Let me look
and
up what
And it is not Adderall.
I know it's not. Right. The reason I bring it up is that people who have also taken it will say, like, it feels a little like, but I don't get any sense of, like, sped up, like, I don't feel like I'm...
Or creativity, or...
So the first time...
Maybe a little focus or something, but I think it's mostly just because I'm not tired. I rarely take it, if ever.
So I think both Nuvigil and modafinil are rumored to be these cognitive enhancing drugs.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
That's what I heard.
Modafinil is Provigil, which is basically, my understanding, is the same as me.
Okay, so there are these drugs that people on the internet claim have made them smarter. And the way that these people on the internet have tested these drugs in a lot of ways is they take the
They're writing on the internet,
drug.
So you know they're smart.
Right. They take the drug and then they sit down and finish a task that they've been unable to finish until then.
Okay.
As if, like, getting through writer's block wasn't just, like, sitting down and forcing yourself to do it and having the extra stakes of, I just took drugs, I don't want to risk losing out on what these drugs could do. When I first started, I'm prescribed these by a doctor. When I first started taking them, the first thing I did was I did a double blind study on myself.
Okay.
That's
great.
Total scientist move.
Right? I took an Altoid and my modafinil, and I mixed them up and put them in peanut butter where I couldn't actually see what they were.
Amazing.
Blinding up.
And so I had written on the bottom of the containers what they were, but I couldn't actually see it. And
cool.
I mixed them up.
Okay. That's how you do a double blind on yourself.
On yourself, right.
Love that.
And so then I took one
Good
one day.
Methodology here.
And went about my life. And took the other one the next day. Went about my life. Journaled any differences I saw. And of course, this is a sample size of one.
Sure.
On a subject of one.
Sure.
And literally the only difference is I didn't yawn 900 times throughout the day when I took the, which I have a sleep disorder. Like, that's part of what happens.
Gotcha.
So it's like Altoids don't prevent yawning. Good to know.
Okay.
Modafinil does what it's supposed to do and keeps me awake, but does not make me smarter or better at my anything.
So on your modafinil day, you were like, okay, I think this is the modafinil because I'm not yawning a bunch.
I was just like noting things, and that was, this could be the modafinil because I'm not falling asleep at my desk.
Okay.
Did the modafinil improve at all the quality of your breath in a minty way? Or did you find that your breath was better on the Altoid day, or was that...
I found my breath tasted like peanut butter both days.
That's what I was going to say.
So the peanut butter overpowered, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so speaking of these drugs, I want to talk about the dealer in this movie, the ex-brother-in-law that comes in towards the beginning,
mm-hmm.
who I, like, that was immediate, and he comes in very early. No, go ahead, Steve.
Weird character to introduce in the movie.
Yeah.
His ex-brother-in-law. His first wife will not really feature that prominently in the film.
They also hired someone who's, like, incredible to play her to show up for one scene.
Who was that?
Anna Friel.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. She was good. Mm-hmm.
She was good.
She's a great actress, and they very much underutilized her.
Honestly, I didn't have much of an issue with
in the film. Maybe that was... Sorry, yeah. I'm getting us off track.
No, it's okay. The acting was fine. It's just some of the logic here. Like, that... character, and by the way, they introduce him via VO. Like, there's a lot of VO narration, and it got to me hard.
Yeah,
he would intro characters and tell us stuff we don't need to know because we'll know in the scene, you know, or it's just like unnecessary information, like with the landlord. Like, he introduces her right before we meet her, and it's like obvious through their conversation, the relationship.
Mm-hmm. They really take you by the hand and walk you through the whole movie. There's no point where you're like on your own.
They assume that you don't have NZT. And are therefore an idiot.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyways, the VO really, I could
maybe
not stand.
Maybe that's how a regular movie would feel to you if you were on
that's probably what they were going for.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be so obvious and simple.
What everything was,
The boys in the kitchen call it NZT-48. By the way, how crazy is that? That's a line that the brother-in-law says, right? The boys in the kitchen call it NZT-48.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't the boys in the, like, the people... Like, that's not what you call... That's not a... Like, shouldn't it
a
be
nickname.
Like...
No,
yeah.
I feel like the chemist had, like, a really long name for it, and then they were like, you gotta come up with something shorter, and the chemists were like, the boys in the kitchen, the guys making it were like, this is our chance to name a cool drug.
Also, if I were...
But they're chemists, so that's the best they could do.
If I'm pushing a drug, I'm not gonna say it's called NZT-48. I'm gonna say, like, the guys in the boys in the kitchen. That makes you sound like you know them, and they're having fun, and they're
but it should be, like,
NZs,
or, like, something.
NZs is better,
NZs
would have been good, but he just doesn't... I took that to mean he doesn't really know the boys in the kitchen. He doesn't...
Yeah.
He's just fronting.
It's like another lie of,
he's
like,
just a
the FDA is approved. Like, that whole thing was also
this
just total bullshit
NZs
for no reason.
Sounds like some sort of digestive issue.
NZs.
Right.
Just give me the NZs.
That's true. Okay, so in general, I thought the movie suffered from being too artsy. I don't know how you guys felt about that, but they, like, really went ham with the tinting.
Well, that was... That was a choice. They made a choice.
Strong choice. Very strong choice, which got to me also.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's like a color correcting or something going on.
If it was more of just, I don't know, a natural looking, put the camera on sticks
again,
film.
I'm going to defend them. I'll be the guy. What if they were saying, like, look, this is a comic book level. This is a cartoony kind of film. This doesn't exist in your, like, perfect reality. We're having fun here.
Yeah.
I'm hinting at that by putting in kind of cartoon colors.
I'll also say, I didn't like it until the last scene.
To the last scene.
So it skips ahead like a year.
Right,
and
he's a senator.
He's got an even shorter haircut.
He's got an even shorter haircut. But they toned it down big time for that last scene.
Mm.
That last scene is like they split the difference.
Okay.
So he's dressed very nicely. He's got a shorter haircut. But you're like, is he on drugs? Is he not on drugs?
Yeah, that's true. I hear what you're saying. I would have liked, I guess, the whole movie to be like that a little bit more, because it was just way too much for me, and I felt almost... And I like artsy movies, and I like indie films, and I like some crazy camera work and all that stuff, but it just seemed, to me at least, to lean more on the comical side. It seemed like almost a satire of itself, or like a parody.
Yes.
Like, he goes to, like, kiss her at one point, and they do all these, like, weird spinning camera moves, and it's like, it's not much going on right now. We don't even need to see this, probably.
There's some stuff that already feels, like, dated and self-parody, like, when he's on NZT and he's writing, and he's like really in the zone, and he's just like staring at his computer screen, smiling, and then like letters start falling
raining
from the hey man,
well, and his fingers start blurring like in Bruce Almighty.
Yes, it was
a lot of filmmakers run right at the challenge of like, I'm just a guy writing a novel, how are we going to make that interesting visually? These guys took it on as well. They tried to do something with it.
It was something. I mean, I'm going to remember it. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And the director had written his previous three films also. And so part of me kind of thought, like, he's going into this. It's this crazy concept. He didn't write it. So he's going to really put himself. Right. Exactly.
Now, Bradley Cooper's character in the film, at first he's a novelist. And he the first thing he does is use the NZT to finish his novel. Then
in
he
4 days.
Like, whatever. He moves on from his novel.
Yeah. I had a big problem with this. And tell me how you guys feel about it. Because intelligence, and maybe you know specifically, but I would think, you know, I love music. I love comedy. I love writing. If I was going to take a brain-enhancing pill, I would think that I would find a way to spend the rest of my life doing that stuff. So, like, he's a novelist, so I would assume once he takes the pill, he'll just now he'll have the perfect writing setup,
crank
and he'll be
out,
cranking out books, cranking out, you know.
Right, he'd be legendary. He'd be the greatest American novelist of all time.
Yes, and instead, he very quickly, after that thing, just decides to, like, I'm gonna travel with friends I just met, and then he realizes, like, I need a ton of money, and then even when he has money, all he's thinking about is, I need way more money.
And power.
And power.
Yeah. So I don't know why that, and they didn't really talk about it, because he didn't, you know, there wasn't really a want, I felt like, for him. Like, if in the beginning he just really wanted to be a great novelist, then at the end he should have, you know, had a bunch of books out or whatever.
Well, and if you really want to be very rich, then you don't become a novelist.
I guess.
Like, generally speaking, that's not the career. Like, you can go into finance as a person who doesn't have hardcore drugs. That's a thing that people do on a pretty regular basis.
Okay. I just felt like he should find a way to enjoy himself more, because that's really the essence of life, the purpose of existence. It's like, I want to, you know, have a high quality of life and actually enjoy myself. And it seems like he just took this hard left turn once he was on the pill of, like...
Well, he does teach himself piano, right?
Yes, that's true.
And languages.
He
kind of becomes like a giant douchebag, though. Like, if you were to, like, run into him at a party and you started talking to him, you would hate him.
Maybe.
Very much.
Yes.
Well, there is also, in terms of, like, his moral flaws or something, there's one thing that I think we need to discuss, which is that he kills someone.
Thank you.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yes.
They don't say it, like, for sure, but it is implied, right?
I think so, for sure. I don't know, like, who else would have killed that woman. Mm-hmm. And, like,
So here's what I will say. This movie, the reason I like this movie is because I think it's a really great... Metaphor seems a strong word, but it's very much a story about bipolar disorder to me.
Okay.
So he's at this place in his life where he's trying to be a creative. He's having a hard time. He's young. They don't say how young he is in the movie, but bipolar disorder tends to hit late teens, early to mid-20s. And then somebody who he hasn't seen in forever, who he doesn't know very well, shows up out of the blue, somebody from his past, and he has his first manic episode. Mm-hmm. And that manic episode, he feels like God. Mm-hmm. He gets a ridiculous amount done. He mentions not being able to sleep, not wanting to sleep, not wanting or needing to eat. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's several points in the movie where he has to remind himself to eat.
Right.
Like, it's very clearly, and he even says the very first time he takes it, he's like, and I didn't feel high or anything. I just felt clear, which is exactly what a manic episode feels like.
Ooh.
And as it gets more and more and more extreme, he has dissociative episodes. He gets paranoid delusions. He has violent states. When he isn't manic, he's not normal. He's extremely the other direction. He's so down and so sick he feels like he's gonna die. Like, it's very much
that I like.
That makes me like it more.
Now I'm on board. Well, let's take it back, because this I hope that you have some brilliant answer like that, but I could not stand that he can't keep track of the pills. It's like three different points in the damn movie where he doesn't know where they are, or he doesn't know how many he has left. It seems I couldn't stand that.
So, okay, let's go through the incidents that I assume you're talking about.
Okay,
Is one of them, because this drove me crazy, I couldn't tell whether he chose to not take the last pill or whether he ran out of the last pill. This is like, sorry.
Which one?
So
the one that was supposedly in the tin?
Yes.
Yeah, so that one like, drove me insane.
It's the morning that he's supposed to go to the big Robert De Niro meeting.
Right.
And I couldn't tell if he had a pill in there and elected not to take it or if he was out of pills.
Right.
And then in VO, you hear him go, like, even without NZT, I decided to go to the meeting or whatever. Later, we find out that there was a pill in there.
Yeah.
And that was very frustrating.
It seemed to go back and forth between, I don't have enough, I can't take it, and everything's terrible, and thank God I have this other stash or whatever.
That is like a bag that's just as big as the first stash he found.
Yeah.
Like he never runs out.
So much
well,
for me.
Well, also, at one point, he commissions someone to make the pills,
mm-hmm.
and because they're not that clear about how much time is passing, at one point I was like, oh, does he have an endless supply now? Did the guy end up making the pills?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They
is
didn't
that what's
say.
Going on?
Well, later they deal with that just like in a sentence, right?
Yes.
Robert
De Niro
like,
says
we shut
down
this morning, and he looks
right.
a tiny bit sad, but it's fine.
But that's like
it.
A year later.
Yeah, and he also says in that conversation, he's like, don't you think I have like 3 or 4 labs? And then he says, I'm off it. I'm not even using them. So why does he have these labs?
The 3 or 4 labs I took, he was lying or bluffing, playing chess with De Niro.
Yeah, right? Just messing with him, maybe.
Well,
I like that.
So I don't know what's canon and what's not in the Limitless verse, but I never watched the TV show. But I did read about it a little bit, and I found this interesting.
Please.
Because I was confused about the ending of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Is he on NZT at the end? Is he not?
Sure.
I don't know. The TV show takes place like about 4 years after the end of the movie.
Mm.
And Bradley Cooper's in the show. He plays the same character.
Okay.
He's a senator now.
Okay.
And the lead character, it's like a different, the main story, as I understand, is like the lead character is now, he's on NZT and he helps like the CSI basically solve crimes and stuff.
So the senator goes and is like, you gotta get a guy with the NZT.
I don't know exactly how it starts, but the important thing here is that in the future, which is the TV show,
right?
Senator Bradley Cooper, Senator, what's his name? Edward Mora?
Yeah, Eddie Mora, yeah.
He has access to antidote for the negative side effects of NZT.
Okay.
So he is able to take NZT and basically be like the ultimate. He's just right.
Gas
and so
brakes.
Who knows? Maybe that's what they thought they were establishing at the end of the movie already, or I don't know.
I mean, because he did say that when you have this drug and you're as smart as he is, like, you can spend the time to
that's
work out
right.
the kinks and all that.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Taper
but at the
off.
Same time,
Sticks
you're like,
says.
You said you have, like, 3 or 4 labs, and then you said you were off it completely, and then you said you had, like, he said, like, 3 different things that all...
And he seems to outsmart other people that are on NZT.
Yeah.
And why is he so much more special than them?
Well,
shouldn't they be just as smart? Or?
It does help if you're smart to begin with.
Yes.
We hear the,
that's one of the few rules.
That's true.
Brother-in-law or someone says
very
that.
Few rules we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about the stash, the main one that bothered me is when he's like very weak and he gets into his girlfriend's office.
Yes.
And very quickly, you know, they forward past his explanation to her. We don't know what he tells her, but it ends up saying, look, I have a stash of these at your house,
which why
the hell would he have them stashed over there? And then also says, you need to go get them. I'm going to stay here. So go, you know, risk your life. He knows people are after him that are dangerous.
Right.
You go figure it out. Bring them back to me. That whole part of the movie I thought could have been deleted. I couldn't
stand
it. Wanted
to be like, dump his ass.
Wait, but hang on now. There's a great part in that. Admittedly, if you think about it like that, yes, cut it. But then there's a part where now she has to take NZT to survive the gauntlet of danger.
I like that, but couldn't we have got there at a, like, couldn't they have been somewhere together and been in danger, and he gives her one in order for her to survive on her own? I don't know. I'm just saying for her,
right.
That sequence to me, I threw my arms out. I was by myself, but I was looking around at someone to just say, what the hell's going on here?
Well, I did, in that sequence, there is one of the few times where you see somebody weigh several options while on NZT.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because she's
the
in
cutters,
danger. Okay, what
cutters?
Are the best weapons? I'm in Central Park.
It's like, whoa, what's happening here?
I need a weapon, bush cutters. Okay, it's sunny springtime, I guess. The bush cutter's pretty good weapon. Then there's a guy with a baseball
just
bat.
Just a guy hanging out with a baseball
just
bat
away.
In Central Park.
Again, it's spring.
Not at the baseball field.
It seems like it's springtime. Then it reveal it's ice skating season.
Sure.
People
right.
are ice skating. That's the weapon you want. A
yeah.
human child.
A small
with a
child.
I
want to
run and make sure I run into this girl who, and her dad's going to just be cool with me grabbing her.
Now, well, and also, like, skates are sharp, but that's not how it works. Kids bend before the momentum would actually do any damage to his face.
Whoa. What do you mean? Like, she would bend her knees?
Yeah, like, she would just end up kicking him in the face,
oh,
and
man.
He'd be like, ow.
I could see how there's a large percentage chance that she would actually get hit by
yeah.
the skate, right?
But it would not slice, and she'd probably the
but she's
probably
on NZT.
Slip on
you guys
the ice.
Are doing limited thinking.
No, wait a second. Why, NZT hold on. Think. Slow this down for me. Why yeah. wouldn't it slice his face?
So the skate blades are not knives. They uh-huh. are essentially a piece of metal that's like half a centimeter thick. That's
too thick.
That's then like hollowed out in the middle to create two little
okay.
blades.
Like a catamaran, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not enough to like slice, like you can't cut carrots with an ice skate.
I see.
Wow. Okay. So it's like, yeah, specially made for the ice.
It's literally for the ice, and so you have control on the ice.
Okay. So that's
wait, so
I didn't even think about that.
If you think of a whipped skate across your cheek as is done in the movie,
have you ever like swung a child around? Like,
well,
they're like rag dolls.
Okay, so but that's a separate issue. Let's
yeah.
let's address.
Like,
what
you just
Healy's
couldn't
saying.
Get the force behind a child.
Okay, but
let's
child.
Let's go. Yeah. So let's start with the blade issue.
All right.
If you had a blade at the if you had an ice skating blade at the end of a stick.
Yeah.
A non-bendable child's leg or whatever,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and I slashed Healy's face with it.
The depth of the slash would be. Like, at most, half a centimeter.
Interesting.
Gosh. Whoa. Okay. I would okay. not have thought
the,
that.
Yeah.
But the other thing is there's toe picks on figure skates.
Uh-huh.
Which are, like, sharp pointed things at the end of the skate. Like, you don't have to slash. Just, like, hit them really hard with the toe pick.
Whoa. Oh, the front part?
Yeah, the front
right,
part
right.
with the spikes.
Again, or the bat or the shit.
Right.
Yeah. That's
that
really
you
true.
You don't have to use a child.
No child at all has to be in this.
Well, also, there were hundreds of people on the ice skating rink. She didn't need to pick. Maybe a kid was
she
the only thing.
She probably couldn't lift.
Okay.
The, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Maybe there were
I mean,
skates
look.
That could have been rented that she could have gone and just picked
right.
up and thrown.
Again, she's on NZT. We're not.
That's yeah,
a,
yeah.
That's,
she,
not,
that's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
If you
point.
Commit a crime while
she
on
did
NZT,
the math.
Should your jurors have to be on NZT?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Judge.
Or with any drug. Yeah. Maybe you have to give them the same drug. Also, I love that, you know, people probably thought going into this, they're going to learn about all sorts of neuroscience, and instead, we're here learning about the mechanics of ice skating, which is very cool.
I figure skated all through high school, so.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Okay, extra knowledge. Okay, this one, another, I want to say it's my biggest gripe with the film, but
whoa.
Maybe some of these are tied for first.
Okay.
He can't get a bank loan. He goes to this restaurant,
yeah.
gets $100,000.
This was the problem.
This was the real issue with the film.
Okay, we can all agree on
I
this.
I loved it.
Yeah.
No.
He gets $100,000 from this Russian mobster and literally says to him, you don't look like somebody I want to disappoint. I will get you this money back. I've been quadrupling my money
yeah.
every day. I'm going to have this to you. Don't even worry about it for a second. You can trust me. And then he doesn't pay him back.
Right. He could have paid him back at any time
and
in
then
the next
days
they
later.
Say he's made like $2.1 million.
Right.
And you're like, okay, so just like that $0.1 doesn't matter to you. Just like go visit the Russian.
Yeah. And the most climactic scene at the end where they come to kill him, it's because this guy has tried NZT and now has become this other, you know,
right.
Upgraded man, but he wouldn't have tried NZT if he just paid him because he came to collect the money and then he like dropped that pill and he was like, what's this? I want to try it.
Another thing I found odd in was that when the loan shark bad guy comes to see him to ask for more pills, Bradley Edward Mora, Bradley Cooper's character, says to him something like, I thought you didn't know where we live. I thought you said you didn't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Does anyone?
I don't remember this.
I was like,
oh, he's like, are you looking for me? He like walks up
to
him.
Yes, he says, are you looking for me? I thought you didn't know where we live or something. I thought you didn't follow us. Mm-hmm. Something that I wish I could remember exactly what he said, but like, isn't that exactly what loan sharks do? They know
like
exactly
they know where,
where you are.
Yeah, I mean, the guy said he would cut his skin off and fold it over and smother him.
Yeah,
That's like when he's giving him the money. Just FYI. You screw this up, I'm going to cut your skin off and put it over
and,
your head.
And that's not going to kill you. You're going to suffocate.
Yeah.
Because I needed that visual
okay, maybe
in
I'll
my
just
life.
Go to the bank.
Yeah.
And there's no excuse because...
Or maybe I'll have to be patient for like a week.
Yeah.
Because I'm quadrupling my money.
Go to an investor somewhere.
You would think one of the things that NZT would help you with is like managing your to-do list. And the top thing on your to-do list would be pay the Russian.
Yes.
Hey, pay the guy.
Pay the guy $100,000 when I'm rich now.
Yeah. I could not stand that. And
that
it seemed
tough.
Such an obvious issue that no one said anything about. And that made me nuts.
Well, it's a bad movie. I mean, that's something to keep in mind.
I didn't want to say it, but I'm glad that you did.
Okay, well, let's just imagine that Edward Mora, look, he loves a bit of danger, right? That's what we know about the guy. He's living on the edge.
Oh, I love this.
He takes any drug anybody gives
him. What about him actually suggests that, like, before he's on NZT? If anything, he's like a recluse who, like, sits in his apartment.
Well, to choose the
lifestyle.
Yeah,
but he's actually cowering away from it.
Probably the scariest thing there is.
He hasn't written anything.
The blank page.
Ugh,
see, this
really
is why you guys are the great debaters. You can take on any issue, even one as silly as this, which to me is very... But again, I love the debate, and we'll get into it soon, some actual debates. But here's another one. This is very small.
Yeah.
This is very small. He's in his apartment. The guys come to kill him. He goes to his phone to call the police, and it says no service. Why doesn't he have service in his own apartment? One. And two, why doesn't he know that he doesn't have service in his apartment?
Okay. Did the Russians, like, shut down the service somehow?
I don't think so.
Because
we see them bash
issue.
The camera.
So he was like, when he first got the apartment, they're like, it's a bunker.
Right.
Okay, so that, or maybe that's why. You have a balcony.
Yeah.
Step outside.
Step outside. Yeah. Try that out. It just seems so silly to me, that part of it, where he's like, oh, no, now what am I going to do? It's like, you knew you didn't have service.
Like, you moved into a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
You're going to be in trouble.
Okay, so minutes after that, they find a safe in his apartment. Do you guys remember what's in the safe?
Yeah.
Yes, it's the two hands of his bodyguards arranged such that they're giving the henchman the finger.
Right.
That's correct.
I was very curious about, like, if they came like that in the original box, because you just see them for a second.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either.
I think that Edward Mora arranged them as such.
Which is another argument to Steve's case that he loves danger and is arranging these to invoke some sort of violence. But why do that? Why put those in your safe at all? Why arrange them like that? I just, that was another one where I thought, and it was glazed over. They just did it for a second. They were like, oh, there's nothing in here. In fact, he's telling us, fuck you.
That's right.
So.
Well, and also, can you imagine if, like, the Russians hadn't shown up? He's just got these four hands, like, slowly rotting in his safe while he unpacks.
It's crazy to me. Crazy move.
He was not making the best decisions at that time. Although then he ends up making some great decisions. I don't know.
Although I will say, if you think about it as, like...
Gross.
Yeah, that one I wanted to get a scientist's take on that.
Yeah. Please.
I wanted to give a take on this because I was losing my damn mind.
Yeah.
First of all, even before he drinks the blood, when the Russian...
Wait, say what it was, okay, go ahead.
When the Russian injects the NZT, he specifically says that when you do it this way, it lasts longer. Which is 100% the opposite of what happens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, non-NZTs.
Like, it gets... So if you take a pill orally, it has to be digested by your stomach and digestive system before it can be absorbed into your body, before it can get to your brain, and then eventually your brain can process it and remove it again and excrete it. When you put it directly in your bloodstream, you skip the first several steps. So it's just bloodstream, brain, process, get rid of.
Got it.
So it happens much, much more quickly. That's why there are things like... time release pills that you can take because we designed them to take longer to be processed.
So if you want something that's going to to be in there for a while, you want to take it orally.
Yeah.
Now, how effective is drinking the blood of a guy who's injected the
zero medicine? Effective. 0% effective.
Mm.
Not only that, it really bothers me that I know this, but swallowing too much blood will make you throw up.
Oh, I bet.
And the way I know this is if anyone has had a really, really bad nosebleed, where the nurse is an idiot and is like, just tilt your head back, which people think stops a nosebleed. It does not stop a nosebleed. All it does is change where the blood is going.
Oh, man. Another falsehood. Like, why is that a popular theory?
Again, the worst part is then, like, people are...
1% of their brain. One, they're like, tilt your head back. That's the first thing you need to
know.
No,
they say pinch. A good nurse says pinch.
But they also say, yeah, it's pinch and tilt your head back is what they say. And the reason they say that is because they don't want you bleeding all over the nurse's office. But the issue is then when you have a kid who's, like, got a real nosebleed, who's, like, really digging for gold or something, now they're both bleeding through the nose and throwing up blood all over your office.
Sweet. Well, that everybody now learns something at home. Parents, you know, if you have kids,
don't tilt your head back.
Tilt your head back if you have a nosebleed.
And kids, don't pick your nose that much.
Right.
Yeah, like, come on.
It's bleeding. Stop.
And also, don't drink the blood of your enemies, even if it contains drugs.
Yeah, I thought that scene was really gross. I hated that. Visually.
There's so much blood in the human body. So much blood in the human body. The chance that, like, what he drank, even if you could get it into your system that way, the chance that what he drank would have any effect is zero.
Okay. So another error.
Off the floor.
Yeah, that's, but it's a new apartment. It's a clean floor.
And then
floor blood.
Everything becomes again saved, right? Because he has the NZT in his system. Yeah. He's able to fight and escape and make all the right moves. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to my final point here about the film, which is the lesson of the movie. What are we taking away from this? Because at the end, I just felt like it's pro-substance abuse. Like, the only thing that's good is NZT in the movie. Everything, you know, there's never a solution where he has to find something in himself or be courageous when he's sober. It's always just, things are bad, I feel like shit, the drug. Right.
And it's not a tragedy that ends with him having to pay for his sins.
Yeah, he is on top at the end,
He's going to be Senator Mora. And he's an acclaimed novelist.
What if the lesson is here, don't trust your senators?
Okay.
Who are these people?
Or people in charge, or like the rich, or I could see that.
Don't trust your Robert De Niro, sort of like a Warren Buffett, John Tudor Jones kind of guy, like a corporate titan.
Yeah.
Well, he's actually good. He's not doing any NZT, right?
Yeah. It seems like it. But he is kind of, you know, throwing his power around.
He's definitely like got the senator... trying to get the senator in his pocket.
Yes.
That's saying something about the power dynamics of this country, believe me.
Yeah.
So here's...
Look, I'm looking for a radical agenda.
Here's how I took it away. Here's what I took away. You've got this guy who's essentially bipolar, real bad.
Okay.
And when he's up, he's up. When he's down, it's going to literally kill him. He learns from his ex-wife that it's possible to essentially get off this drug without it literally killing you.
Taper down is her incredible advice.
But she's not doing great.
She's not doing great.
Yeah. It's not like you want to be like her at that moment.
If you look at the way we treat most extreme cases of bipolar 1, the people who are at a point where they are no longer having these giant swings, they're not doing great. And it's really hard to keep people who have bipolar 1 on their medication because they miss the high so much.
Yeah.
Because I remember that from Abnormal Psych. Shout out.
And a lot of, by the way, and very creative people like had bipolar and had a very hard time taking their meds.
Right.
If they were offered meds at all and ended up killing themselves. Like this is a...
But do you think the movie...
So what I think is at the end of the movie when he explains that when he had a manic episode, he managed to have a breakthrough where he somehow fixed the kinks. Uh-huh. I took that to mean that metaphorically or actually he somehow managed to find a drug that levels him out. So he's not having these insane swings. He's not having dissociative states. He's not paranoid and delusional and murdering people.
He does say, like, he tweaked it. He refined it. Right. He's had years to work on it.
Also, most people with bipolar disorder don't murder anybody.
So is this a fantasy of sort of like what the perfect both... wonder and down of bipolarism leading to like a perfectly level taking all the good positives without any of the downside.
I will say he
wouldn't
also
wouldn't it be beautiful if a person could achieve that.
He doesn't seem manic at the end. Like, he seems smart, but he doesn't seem like he's all the way up.
Well, there is that moment where he's explaining the car crash, predicting the future.
God, that sucks.
That bothered me. And then he's also, like, speaking Chinese. And then there's a quick shot of her, and you're like, is she on it, too? I think she's on it, too.
Interesting.
Like, and he feels De Niro's heart and tells him, like, his condition. It's a lot.
It felt like they were setting up a sequel to me.
Well, the book... There is a sequel to the book.
Oh, well, the book is a crazy ending.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, let's talk about that. I don't know what that is. Do you know?
Yeah, hold on. Let me call
it. Is that one called, like, even a little bit limited?
It's called, like, Dark... What is it called?
Limitlesser.
They changed the title of the book to Limitless after the movie came out.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Dark Fields is the title of the book the movie Limitless is based on. And
isn't
then
that
he's
the title
writing
of the book?
Oh, that's clever.
Illuminating the Dark Fields.
Inception.
I will say this. One thing we can give the movie credit for is that at no point does he read an excerpt from his book and have someone go, that is great writing, because that's like the worst Sorkin.
Yeah.
Like,
I had a huge problem with, we don't even know what this book is about. And the editor reads three pages and she loses her mind.
Yeah.
She can't believe it. She's calling him after years of abandoning him.
It would have been nice, to get a little.
But somehow giving him an advance. Like, did she pay him to go away?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like it.
Here's the last paragraph of the plot description of the novel.
Great. Okay? I love it. Spoilers for the book, guys.
It's like very similar until here.
Okay.
Facing imminent death from withdrawal, Edward comes to terms with his own actions. He has killed someone, by the way, in the book, for sure.
Okay, I thought so in the movie,
too. Yes, okay.
I was pretty sure.
Edward comes to terms with his own actions and travels to Mayo Pack, New York, that's upstate, where he seeks redemption by leaving a bag full of cash at his ex-wife's doorstep. He then continues driving aimlessly up north and eventually checks into a remote motel along the Vermont Highway, where he pens his account of the last few months of his life and the events leading to his ultimate downfall. As he drifts into a semi-conscious state, Edward watches on as the president, this goes to Healy's theory, as the president, visibly under the influence of MDT, which is the book's version of whatever, what is it called? NZT?
NZT-48.
The president, visibly under the influence, announces the deployment of U.S. troops into Mexico in a televised address to the nation.
There you go. What did I tell you?
Wow.
That's
very
crazy.
Different.
Well, now I need to read the sequel.
I guess we have to.
Well, now, I definitely am curious how the sequel goes down. Does he need to take more MDT to stop the president from invading Mexico? Like,
I'll tell you what, we're all going
to
read the sequel
tomorrow. Come back, read it tonight, come back tomorrow, having read.
Yeah. Well, we're recording a podcast tomorrow, but the next day.
Okay.
Right. I can't do that, though. That's,
well, no, you'll figure it out
so
for sure.
So, Saturday.
Saturday is
my dog's birthday.
Softball.
Okay. Ooh, and I'm going out of town on Monday.
Right, and then it's the fourth, pretty much. You know what? Let's just not read the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we could read, like, the Spark Notes.
If you,
no
you
need.
Know what? You read them, and definitely,
I'll fill you guys
like,
in.
You can give us the Cliff Notes of the
Spark Notes. Because I'll read
notes.
Them, too.
I'll
definitely.
Just, I'll summarize the book to you guys right before we record.
Yeah,
and then we can all talk about it.
Perfect. See, that's good.
Okay, and we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to have the guys debate, and then we're going to get into some hardcore neuropharmacology.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now, only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, we are back, and the time has come. The bell has rung. I don't know the right way to say
this. That's right. That's right.
The curtain's up, and we're going to have a debate. Obviously, we wish Medina was here. Medina, shout out. We love you. And instead, Tegan and I will be moderating, and we will weigh in on how the debate goes.
Pick a winner.
I'll tell you guys the topic, and you guys can decide who will take the pro and the con.
Okay.
So the first one, very simply, Limitless is a good movie.
Well, I think it's pretty clear you should...
I take the more life-affirming side, usually, so yeah.
That's true. Okay, so here we go. 3 minutes? Some micro?
That should be fine, yeah.
Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Healy, and I'll be taking the pro. Limitless is a good movie. Is it a great movie? Is it one of the best movies you're going to see? Absolutely not. Is it a very good piece of filmed entertainment with some terrific movie stars, a propulsive, explosive plot, a premise that will lead to conversation, thought, scenes of sex and action and beautiful New York City, wish fulfillment fantasies of what would happen if I could become really rich and really powerful without doing anything, write a famous book, moral choices, dilemmas, problems, challenges? Does a protagonist change as he evolves through a series of cycles through life? Yes, all of that is packed into the 110 minutes or whatever of Limitless, directed by a talented filmmaker, starring a talented actor who's gone on to bigger and better things. Robert De Niro, one of the favorites. This is a very solid, very good movie, worth your time and money.
We should evaluate a movie no different than other pieces of art. And the way we should, the questions we should ask ourselves are, what do we feel once the movie is over? What are we left with? Are we asking interesting questions? Do we feel something? Have we learned anything? And the answer when we watch Limitless is no. We don't know what this character was to begin with. We don't know what sort of questions we're supposed to be asking about drugs, about it. It deals. Here's the thing, is that it touches on so many different interesting subjects. Finance, science, drugs, neuropsychology, relationships, all of these things, business, and yet it doesn't have an interesting take on any of them. It's also way too heavy-handed. The cinematography is way too, like, lustrous and, like, too vivid and too candy-colored. It's distracting. It's too stylistic because it doesn't have enough actual message or heart to it. I couldn't tell you what the core philosophy or core being of any of the characters is, let alone the main character. It also is not age well in many senses. One of the main ones being that we have basically an all-white cast. The female characters are way underrepresented. We don't know anything about them other than that they're props for the main character. It's a bad movie. It left me with nothing.
Okay, what do we want to take away from the cinema? What feelings do we want? We want to feel stimulated, excited, curious, provoked, amused, entertained. All of that you get from watching Limitless.
We've been talking for 45 minutes about how we felt frustrated, let down, confused.
That's because you're a sourpuss, but we've also been talking for an hour about the movie, a movie which came out, I don't know, 10 or something years ago, and we're still talking about it right there.
We
it's
were
a good
assigned
movie.
To watch it. It's not like we said we should watch,
but
we have to watch
everybody
Limitless.
Everybody in the world has sort of heard of the premise of Limitless. It was so good and exciting of a premise that they made a TV show out of it. This
is a great reason why it's a concept. Disappointing letdown of a movie. There is a decent premise there. It's not an original one.
This is such
but
a
that you can untap
attitude.
Everything
I hate
in
this
your
attitude.
Brain.
Like the
oh, timer went off.
Wow. Okay. I know that's not the typical sound you guys are used to.
Whew, I was barely getting warmed up, and I convinced myself.
I think, yeah, we could have easily had a much longer debate on that, but unfortunately it's bad science and not the great debates.
I will say I think we have had a much longer debate on that. I think that's what we've been doing for an hour.
What'd you think?
Yeah, Tegan, weigh in.
I was inclined to think it wasn't a bad movie, because you're right, it was engaging and action-filled, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day... if I want that, I want to watch Pacific Rim.
Wow. Mm. No one's saying it's no Pacific Rim level.
Yes, of course. I was biased, I admit. Obviously, yeah. I agree with Dave's points mm-hmm. about the film, but I thought you made a terrific argument. So
That should go to Healy then. You cannot take the question isn't what's the right answer. The question is who won the debate.
Yes, yes.
And so I feel like
Healy taking notes in the middle was also like really persuasive. I was like,
yeah,
wow.
That was cool.
This is
persuasive.
I
got to
say, like, about this, I haven't seen this movie, but it reminds me a little of Limitless, mm-hmm. the bucket list, right?
I've seen the bucket list.
If there's a movie that comes out and it just people talk about the premise and the idea sparks conversation, does it matter if the movie itself is good or bad, or Pay It Forward, another one like...
Oh, Pay It Forward, I like
that. That's a great movie.
Yeah,
isn't there just like value to having introduced this concept?
That's true. People can talk.
Brought it to everyone's attention.
Okay, let's not dilly-daddle.
Is there? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
It could still be a bad movie.
So we're going to get into after... we're going to get into, after the debate, some of this brain enhancement stuff that's actually on the market.
Okay.
Nootropics. So speaking of that, here's your next debate. We can decide who takes the pro or the con. Brain-enhancing pills should be as popular as kombucha.
Okay, well, I'm taking the pro again.
I guess so, yeah.
Sure,
just go ahead. Yeah,
all right, okay. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Brain-enhancing pills are here. They are a part of our world. They exist. They're out there. There's no stopping them. So how popular should they be? I would say they should be about as popular as kombucha. Kind of a fringe product for people who know about what it is. It's not for everyone. No one's forcing it on you. You don't have to have it. You should get a little bit of education and have to do a little bit of work to even find this product. It shouldn't be everywhere where people can get too much of it and cause themselves harm. But if you really like need some brain enhancing pills and you've done some research, yeah, like kombucha, it should be somewhat available to you. I think kombucha is somewhat regulated.
Okay, so Healy's lost the debate because he doesn't understand the accessibility of kombucha. Like, you can get kombucha, whatever, anywhere you want. It's at any supermarket.
Anywhere you want in hipster LA.
Teenagers are buying kombucha as an impulse buy at checkout lines at supermarkets across the country. It's over the counter. You don't need.
It's the topic of the summer.
Well, it actually is sort of like a hacky millennial reference that people are drinking kombucha.
In your UCB Echo Park world?
Not at all.
Yeah,
like, search
Texas,
Twitter for kombucha. You'll see everyone talking.
Search the hipster newsletter for kombucha. You'll see. There it is. That's not.
Okay.
This
well,
is not a problem.
Even if we're talking about like our small community of quote unquote hipster Los Angeles, you're still talking about millions of people who are basically like under the age of 45 in a major metropolis. That applies to like probably about 180 million people in the whole country. It shouldn't be that accessible as kombucha is. Brain, whatever we're about to start talking about, nootropics, like, you should not be able, you said it yourself, that this is something where you should have to do a little research or know where to get it. That's not what kombucha is. And if you think that these kind of drugs should require a certain, like, barrier of entry to be able to consume them, then, my friend, you have totally misunderstood how many people are drinking kombucha on a regular basis.
Level of
because I
as
agree
kombucha.
With you.
Slightly disgusting taste, maybe some, you know.
Oh, some people love the taste. A lot of people crave the taste of kombucha. And in fact, it's more, the flavors of kombucha are more varied than ever. They're basically being advertised and marketed the same way that like LaCroix is. You can get grapefruit kombucha now. You can get super healthy kombucha. You can get super sugary kombucha. You can get all kinds of kombucha.
Are you going to address the topic? Like, should brain drugs be that common?
There's
like,
Healy, the topic isn't just about brain drugs.
Okay,
this is your misunderstanding. That it's equally
about
kombucha.
Kombucha. Okay.
You turned it into that, and it was your big mistake.
I'll greet
and it's
you on
all
your terms.
I need
I
to
will
win
greet
the debate.
You in your world where 180 million people in the country are drinking kombucha. Fine. Okay. Are you going to tell these people they can't have brain enhancing drugs? Advil is a brain enhancing drug.
No, actually, Healy, I'm not
drugs.
The one who said that. You're the one who said that that people should have a certain amount of research necessary, or there should be limited access to people who are taking these kind of drugs. I'm legitimately mad at you.
Right? Good.
No, I'm not. It's getting him fired up. Blood boil.
Here.
Tegan.
So while I agree that kombucha is too common and should not be successful as it is, Healy pointed out that caffeine is a brain-enhancing drug, and even at one point described kombucha using certain words that a lot of people used to describe coffee, and that's what won me over is because... caffeine is.
Wow.
So the fact that
in Dave's world, you got to go to the government to get your coffee.
Brain enhancing drugs are already much more common than kombucha.
Well, I kind of had an interesting take on it, which is that I thought we strayed away a little bit from the topic. So I was agreeing with Steve on that. But I had to pick Dave as far as the winner of the debate because of the amount of time you took up. It's like ball control.
That's right. Yeah.
You know?
Classic Dave tactic.
Classic. Yeah. Yeah.
Just
you were just, at some point, you were steamrolling, and I just felt like, well, this is going to have to.
By the way, for the debaters out there, like, you can win 60% of debates just by the other person being like, oh, fine, whatever. Ugh.
Right. I mean, it's a good tactic. It makes sense.
I will also say, I thought Dave was going to go the route of saying, like, because this topic has like three sides, right? It should be as common as kombucha.
Yeah.
Or you could say it should be less than or more than.
Right.
I thought you were going to go the more than route.
Oh, that's
of like if you're if you're saying this is a good thing, then everyone should have access to it. If you're saying it's safe, as safe as kombucha, everyone should have access to it. It would improve everyone's lives.
Could have used you.
That's so right.
He chose to fought on how much kombucha is out there, which is interesting.
It's more fun. Yeah. Incidentally, we can laugh about like your thing, you know, make a joke about like you should have to go to the government for coffee and stuff.
Uh-huh. I love
we
this.
We do have government warnings in coffee establishments now. Because like the
in
government,
California.
Yeah, the government is involved in our coffee intake.
Wait, that like cancer message that's on every kind of building in California.
Literally, you drive into California and there's a sign that's like the state of California is known to the state of California to cause cancer. I don't think it's specific to coffee. I mean, it's just on everything.
Healy, there may have been a time when people said, like, you should have to, you have to go to the government for your cigarettes in Dave's world.
Yeah.
You say you should have to go to the government for your cocaine?
All right, so here's the last one, and I do like this one.
Woo. Oh, another?
Okay. One more. Right, we got one more, okay. I was going to say, Tegan, you can weigh in, but I don't know. Now these guys are fired up, so there's a crossfire going on.
There's
going
to be a punch thrown any second
yeah,
now.
Yeah, any second now it's going to get violent. Okay, here it is. Chemically altering your mind during writer's block is a good idea.
Okay, am I taking the pro side?
I mean, always life-affirming.
Cool. All right, I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Look, you're having a problem. Chemically alter your brain with a nice cup of tea or, you know, two beers. It doesn't have to be chemically altering your brain. Doesn't have to be a snort of cocaine or whatever. Like, there's a lot of ways to chemically alter your brain. Drinking more water alters the chemical balance of your brain. If you're having writer's block, drink some water. Exercise. That alters the chemical balance of your brain. Go for it. I say those are exercise, water, tea. These are all good ways to break your writer's block. If you want to have a little alcohol, I'm not going to judge you. Go for that too.
Well, I believe we need to put some parameters on what it means to alter the chemistry of your brain, because even sitting and writing is going to alter the chemistry of your brain to some extent.
Give us a ruling here.
I mean, your brain is different from one second to the next, so
I would say,
you need some amount of parameters.
I'll weigh in and just say that, I meant more chemically alter as a tea I might count, but really I was going for a drug.
I would say caffeine is incredibly psychoactive
Let's stipulate that we're talking about by ingesting something.
Okay.
Yeah, how does that sound?
Cool. Let's do that.
All right. Okay. So I would say that the most productive thing you could do if
chocolate.
Sure. I don't know why you said it in that voice.
That's how we talk about chocolate.
It is.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Chocolate.
Okay. Sometimes when Healy has a character named Aunt Cheryl that debates about chocolates and
my nieces.
And the holidays, if we're talking about Christmas.
I love Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween. You know why I love Halloween? Chocolate.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, so what are the best things you can do if you have writer's block? Change your environment. Take a walk. Studies show that actually just getting up and walking is as good for your brain as pretty much anything else there is. Take a rest. Try to just pick up your notebook or your laptop and go to a different place. Even just passing through a doorway has been noted to like change our frame of reference and get us thinking about different things. If you're going to, like, the things that you're talking about, tea, coffee, chocolate, any kinds of artificial stimulants or natural stimulants, they're going to have a short-term positive effect, and then you're going to crash, and it's going to be even worse for your writer's block, because what you need is sustained creativity. And if you go for a short burst, you're going to eventually dip, and it's going to only make you feel worse about what little work you're getting done, and you're going to actually sink further into writer's block if you go the quick fix route.
Okay, let me make an actually, I think, serious point here.
What was I doing?
The doorway
is a backhanded way to it's so unfair.
Taking a walk, exercise, all that stuff. Let's call that, like, let's say writing is like digging a mine, and all that stuff that you talked about, walking through a door, whatever, that's all picks and shovels. And ingesting something like chocolate or coffee or whatever, that's dynamite. You don't want to use dynamite all the time, but if you hit like a bunch of rock,
your serious point is just to change the metaphor that we're talking about. To just say that it's more powerful in a different way isn't any sort of actual argument that it's more powerful.
Would you let me finish?
I guess, but I'll just say that. Oh, sorry, bud. I can't let you finish.
Tegan.
My general philosophy in the past has been to write drunk, edit caffeinated. And you have changed my mind,
wow,
sir.
Really?
Walking through some doors.
Walk through doors.
See what happens.
Would you say write drunk, edit caffeinated?
Oh, yeah.
That's not bad. I got to give it to Dave as well. Again, a kind of with the timing, but I really do feel like you were on the cusp there.
You're sad.
If there was another minute, I felt like I would have gone heels.
Look, you know, it was a good debate. I enjoyed it. Glad to be here.
Don't you want to sum up your point in 10 seconds?
I did feel like you kind of left some stuff on the table as far as just, you know, getting loose, shaking yourself up, have a drink. You know, many authors have done it, all that kind of stuff.
Unfortunately, Dave robbed us of my point, so we'll just have to move on.
Wow.
And you're going to be too petty to share with us now, even though we both agreed beforehand to play by the rules of the time constraints?
I mean, look.
I'm just saying, does salt count as an ingested substance? Because
No, we were going drugs.
Doing any of this stuff, it can be helpful, but if you do it all the time, you're going to get in trouble, right? It's the simple, obvious.
I did like the dynamite line. I thought that was good.
I like the part where I was like, that's dumb.
I like the insurer.
Chocolate.
Yeah, that probably was everyone's favorite part. Okay, so let's get into some of this stuff. I don't know a lot about it. I don't know if you guys do, Steve and Dave, but I had a friend that had done one of two things. One of them was nootropics. Am I still saying that right?
Okay, nootropics.
N-O-O?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it looks very strange. But so there's a bunch of these on the market that say that they improve memory, focus, and then I guess there are some cons that are like you crash and such. So I just want to know where you weigh in on it.
Yeah, so there are drugs that will temporarily enhance certain aspects of cognition, where people in double-blind studies will perform better on certain memory tasks or things like that. However, as far as I know, I have not seen anything that performs better than caffeine.
Mm. Wow.
So essentially what we find is if you make the brain move faster, the brain moves faster.
Okay.
But anyone who has ever had withdrawal from caffeine knows that that's not free. Mm-hmm. And also you might start having one cup of coffee in the morning, but at a certain point your brain adapts. Mm-hmm. Your brain essentially gets used to one cup of coffee and that becomes your new baseline. And now you're having two cups of coffee just to get to the same level you were before.
Well, you said earlier that you edit caffeinated.
Right.
So do you regularly drink caffeine of some sort?
I very much limit my caffeine intake, mostly because if I skip a day, I will have migraines so bad that I will be crying in my bathroom.
Whoa. So you're already at past the point of no return.
Yeah.
You need your fix.
Yeah. And I have one cup a day.
One cup of coffee.
One cup of coffee. That's
you guys, what do you do?
Caffeine? I have about a cup of coffee a day.
I would say I have about the equivalent of like 1.5 to 2 cups of coffee a day, probably.
What does the equivalent mean? You're drinking a bunch of tea?
No, it means that like I'll have like a coffee in the morning and then a coffee in the afternoon usually, and sometimes there's other caffeinated beverages or like
Coke
occasionally.
Okay, a little soda.
So here's a question.
I try not. I mean, that's terrible.
Do you find you drink less caffeine on days when you take your new vigil?
I so rarely take it. I have to, like, the only times I really take New Vigil are for, like, extreme, because it kind of is, like, a little scary to me, even though I've taken it a lot. So, like, if I'm traveling and only get 3 hours of sleep and I need to, whatever, like, be awake, or if I, when we had all like overnight shoots on a set and I need to stay up until literally all night, all day and night until 7 in the morning.
You literally use it for the things you're not supposed to use it
for?
That's
correct.
Okay.
Yes. That is kind of true. I basically only use it recreationally or to stay up like maybe there have been 2 nights in the past 5 years when I've been like, okay, I guess I'm not sleeping tonight and so I'm just gonna like go through, I'll just take it at 4 in the morning and stay up and
okay. And have you noticed the negative parts of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I just find that, like, when the tired comes back, it comes back hard.
Well,
and it's like,
ask,
I just gotta lie down right now.
Do you find you drink less caffeine?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Okay.
So that's a big thing for me. I used to drink, like, my dose of caffeine was real high.
Mm.
And when I first started taking this, I had issues because I started withdrawing from caffeine because I wasn't keeping myself awake with caffeine anymore.
Right, right.
Tegan, maybe you know the answer to this. I've been wondering about this. Somebody mentioned it to me as just their own observation, like, that if you want to get energy from coffee, just have coffee. Don't have any milk or whatever in there. Like a
I
latte
always
or
drink
cappuccino.
Black coffee. I don't know.
What is the effect of the milk on the caffeine, right? Because a lot of people are drinking, like, a frappuccino or whatever. That's got all kinds of craziness.
My guess, I don't know for sure, but my guess would be it gets into your system slower.
Okay.
Because your body's spending a lot of time digesting
just milking
the milk
out.
And the sugar and all of that.
I was going to say there's usually sugar in milk, right?
Yes. So there's lactose.
That's it, yeah.
But also people like frappuccinos, who knows, like
God knows it's
people getting those frilly drinks, I don't know.
Okay, so not necessarily recommended to try nootropics, you would say.
No, I mean if you're prescribed them by a doctor,
not if you're prescribed them. I'm talking
but
about
recreationally.
Just these, yeah, there's like these promotional.
Are you talking about like Alpha Brain and On It and like that.
Yeah, there's,
also,
they're
I just
not
today
proven.
Bought some like bulletproof coconut oil stuff. Talk to me about that.
Sell me on that.
I have no idea.
Tell me that's.
Oh,
good.
Is that this? I have no idea. Basically, what it comes down to is snake oil salesmen have been around forever. Mm-hmm. If it's not FDA approved and prescribed to you by a doctor,
yeah,
it's probably not going to help your brain.
Okay. What are the
and it might hurt your brain.
What are the prescription drugs that that could actually help?
So Adderall is the big one.
Yeah.
And Adderall, I hope we know, has major downsides if it's abused as well. Mm-hmm. People who have severe ADD and severe ADHD, it's life-changing. Because all of a sudden the noise in their brain that has prevented them from being functional adults is gone and they can actually do normal things.
Yeah.
But if you overtake it or if you take it when you don't have that, you're essentially messing up your dopamine system, which is what lets you, you know, learn.
It's a big one.
And sort of be a human in the world.
Yeah.
Gotta have that.
What if you're done with learning, sort of?
Sort of.
You're out of school.
I mean, dopamine. If you're out of school, like, I don't know why you're trying to take smart drugs if you're done with learning.
You feel like you know enough stuff.
But then you need to learn piano.
Then you don't need smart drugs.
Okay, so what about microdosing? You know about this?
Great. Microdosing of like psychedelics?
That's
correct.
Yeah,
baby.
I've never tried this either, but it's been, I can't tell you how many times someone has suggested to me.
Michael Pollan's writing about it now.
Aren't like 50% of podcasts and some guy microdosing?
So this is how I feel today.
Well, so micropodding is a new trend too, where people record 30-second podcasts
that's
every day.
That's great. When do you listen to that?
Like,
during commercials.
When
I
you
cut
pee?
Off to get it. Yeah.
That's great.
So the issue with saying anything about microdosing of LSD or other psychedelics is that psychedelics are all classified as Schedule 1 drugs in the U.S.
Okay.
Which means it is incredibly difficult to be allowed to study them.
Right. Okay.
So there, I've also been told I should try microdosing.
You just don't know the effects, I guess.
But
we don't
you
have
can't
research.
Know the answer to how it affects you because there haven't been enough studies done.
It's all anecdotal.
It really is.
There,
yeah.
Well, and also, you know, they say with a lot of drugs, you get out of it what you put into it. And so if you, like, it's the same thing with my double-blind modafinil thing. If you go into it being like, this is a smart drug, and I'm going to take this, and then I'm going to finish my term paper, and it's going to be the best paper I ever wrote, you could probably do just as well with an Altoid.
Right.
Got it.
Been a good pep talk.
Yeah. Nothing a good pep talk can't fix.
Again, I feel like we're underestimating Altoids in this.
I'm just saying, like, Space
Jam.
They
keep coming up.
Space Jam had it right.
Yeah.
Like, Space Jam had the magic water.
That's right.
And the placebo effect is real.
Are there, I mean, you were talking before about, you know, taking a walk and, you know, like, natural ways to improve brain functionality.
Exercise is the best. And not just exercise, but about a half hour of cardio.
Okay.
So for a very long time, neuroscientists thought that your brain was done growing by about age 3.
Whoa.
That you got no new neurons after about age 3.
Yeah.
And everything that happened after that was either things that already existed wiring differently or what's called pruning, which is selective death of your brain cells.
Wow.
Your brain doesn't heal. You don't get new neurons.
Okay.
We recently, fairly recently discovered that's not entirely true. There are at least 2 very specific places in the brain where you can get new neurons.
Okay.
Wow.
And one of the best ways to trigger what's called neurogenesis, the birth of new neurons, is 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise.
Wow. Please say the others like watching TV.
Brownies.
The interesting thing about this is that high-intensity interval training doesn't seem to do it as well. Ooh. And lifting weights doesn't seem to do as well.
Interesting.
So what's like just a good, like jogging basically?
Like go for a jog, go for a swim.
Uh-huh.
If you're really out of shape, even going for a walk for half an hour.
Get your
heart rate up, get yourself breathing a little heavy.
Yeah. Okay.
It's also going to give you a nice serotonin and dopamine boost.
Right.
That's right up in
your brain.
Love that.
It's great.
Then just harvest away.
Okay, sweet. Well, that's really good advice. Sorry. Oh, yeah, please.
There were two ways to do it.
Oh, yeah.
No, I said there's two main places in the brain.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
There's
I misunderstood that, too.
Like, new neurons appear to pop up in other situations.
Okay.
We're still sort of sussing out how and why. And hopefully this will be great for people with things like Alzheimer's, things like Parkinson's disease, what people have traumatic brain injuries. If we can figure out how to convince the brain to heal itself, that would be great.
Yeah. So do like athletes and people that do 30 minutes of cardio every day have more neurons than the average Joe?
I mean, it depends. There's a few things. Having more neurons isn't necessarily better.
Whoa.
It's sort of all about how they're connected.
That's what I say when I don't go to the gym.
So you might get more neurogenesis, but if you're not using those connections, your brain is use it or lose it.
Oh, okay. So it's doing the cardio and then reading.
And then using your brain.
Okay.
Creating new memories.
Two things.
I will also say a lot of athletes, highest rates of traumatic brain injury are number two, football.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think that's number one. It's not. Number one, does anybody have a guess?
Rugby?
Nope. Because they're not wearing helmets, they protect their heads. So they don't get hit in the head as often.
Oh, that makes sense.
You wear a helmet, you feel invincible?
Hockey?
Nope.
Okay.
Gymnastics.
Gymnastics? From what, falling?
Yeah, from flipping around and being upside down a bunch.
Wow.
From making really brave choices on a very narrow beam on bars.
Should gymnasts, what's the word I'm looking for?
Gymnasts?
Gymnasts? Should gymnasts wear, some protective gear, you think?
I mean, the issue is that you're more, like if you're doing gymnastics and you have a limited vision because you're wearing a helmet, you're more likely to fall.
Oh, geez.
And also traumatic brain injuries are caused by your brain hitting your skull, not by...
I've heard that... Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
I read once that there's theories about, like, hyperbaric chambers and being able to, like, manage the trauma from concussions and subconcussive hits to the brain. Is there anything to that that you've heard of? Someone said, like, if every NFL locker room had a hyperbaric chamber and you put a player in there within an hour of playing, that it would undo a lot of the damage that they caused. Does that make any sense?
I mean, one of the things that causes cells to die is lack of oxygen.
Right.
So I could see giving them a buttload of oxygen
would hurt or something.
Help save the neurons that aren't already dead, that are like just injured. But the number one thing you want to do to prevent traumatic brain injury is not get hit in the head really hard
by a
300-pound athlete.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can avoid that, it's probably good, I guess.
Or by the ground.
Yeah. Right.
Deal.
Okay. So the second game I want to do is the pitch it to the limit. I want you guys, and this can be quick, but I just want a different storyline for Limitless. So the same, it's centered around the same drug, NZT-48, but not the plot of Limitless. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I saying this
Are we
right?
working together? Are we doing competing pitches?
Let's work together.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
Why not?
Here's where I'm starting, Dave, just to open the dialogue. A father's child is sick. He would do anything to find a cure for this disease.
Well, that's nice.
He would take any drug.
I like this because I'm emotionally invested.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm rooting for this
guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
It's like John Q almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never
single dad.
Oh.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
My heart goes out.
Yeah. I don't know. Who could we get? Who'd be good for this? You're great at casting.
I mean, we don't need to recast this movie. Bradley Cooper's a home run.
Yeah.
But could it be, maybe it's like a Jeffrey Wright or someone, maybe we could really more emotional subtleties
here. Well, Jeffrey Wright could maybe be like the doctor who's like,
oh, Healy, now
we're
talking.
If only we could just move we're so close to the science on this, we just don't have the government cut out the funding and blah, blah, blah. And so we're left with, this is as far as we've gotten.
Okay, and so the basic pitch
is
that...
If you want me to save your son's life, learn this! He points to some problem.
I see.
No one can learn it.
So it's like, and then he, so sort of, the guy has no choice. He almost sacrifices his own life to save his
Absolutely,
son.
Absolutely, he would if he could.
He's like, he sort of Goodwill Hunting's the situation.
Yeah, it's kind of like pre-Goodwill Hunting. I think we just do Goodwill Hunting with Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
And before, except that before, you know, like 5 minutes before the beginning of Goodwill Hunting, Ben Affleck says to Bradley Cooper, I got this new drug, NZT, here, take it. Oh, I'm a genius. Okay.
Yeah.
Go.
I
begin
like that.
Goodwill Hunting, but with Bradley Cooper instead of Matt Damon.
It all lines up from there.
Where's Tegan? Okay,
I was going to ask, how do we involve, because I need a fight scene,
okay,
and I need some sort of love story. So can you give me...
Right.
It's not make or break. We're still going to buy your film. I think Tegan and I are very...
Wow.
And I are very impressed. But
is this a major, like more of an indie awards kind of
deal? Like a focus features.
Okay,
kind of thing.
In that case, Jeffrey Wright and is the love interest for Coop.
Whoa. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's go there.
Let's go there.
Single tier, man.
In a big way.
And frankly, his homophobia, Bradley Cooper's, that he had from his conservative childhood, the NZT gets rid of that, too.
Whoa.
And that lets him explore his love.
And that's something we really actually want to dig into in this reimagining of Limitless, is the idea that a drug that when you finally do use 100% of your brain, as apocryphal as that might be, that you not only become more, your senses all become more acute and all of those things that we've seen before, but what also ends up happening is that you become more compassionate, you become more empathetic, you have a social understanding that is deeper, you become more loving, mm-hmm. you basically, like, at the risk of sounding corny, you understand the connectedness between all human beings,
yeah.
Which is something I think that the first Limitless, you know, which we like a lot, but we'd really like to explore those themes more in this one.
The first Limitless took us to the limit of the brain.
Right.
We're going to add that next extra, the heart.
The brain's heart.
What if you could be
limitless? We're calling it
the brain's
heart.
And is that what he's trying to fix in his son, his heart?
Well, that's the irony, is that the son has a congenital heart disease where he doesn't have a heart.
Wow.
Yeah. And they say, oh, he has Tin Man's disease, and ha ha ha, and they make fun of it.
Tin Boy.
They call him the Tin Boy, but
it's horrible.
It's
but you feel for him.
Yeah.
Okay, and where
I just love that, like, over the course of this movie, it sounds like not only does Bradley Cooper save his son, but he also saves himself.
And oh, absolutely.
Ideally,
wow.
Yes, saves 100%. Us, you and me.
Yeah.
And
so where is the violence? Because our audience, you know, our target audience wants to...
Oh, he does Muay Thai.
He what?
He does Muay Thai fighting. That's his
hobby.
Yeah, but
it's really cool, though.
Yeah, he's in a tournament.
Trust us.
He
really
loses.
Cool.
I'm asking.
Wait, are we talking about the son without a heart? Or
yeah, him too.
Him too. That's
because
that
actually
was what
helps him.
That was what brought them together.
Yeah. But where's the danger? Is I guess what I'm asking. Where does the fight scene take place, and who is it with?
Well, that's no stakes.
A dojo. Yeah.
It's a training.
It's in
sequence?
Like a dojo
it's
on Pico.
$200.
And it's like
he doesn't need the money.
Yeah, it's more of just like a sort of like time passage montage than anything.
We might not see it.
We might not. Yeah. We might get
okay.
cut.
I don't know.
It
we
still seems to.
We're gonna shoot
be
to cut.
Casted all white male.
Well, we got Jeffrey Wright.
Right,
but
isn't
we
it?
Do have.
Oh, oh.
No, we have
the
a
child
representation
is gonna
for
be
sure.
Very diverse.
Okay. Thank God.
I mean, we'll work on it.
Race blind baby casting for the childless.
Perfect.
Heart.
Gender blind.
Yeah. But we do want to get a real kid that doesn't have a heart.
That's the trick.
Representation matters.
We've educated ourselves. Mm-hmm. We said 60 minutes. We know all about this is a real, and we
want
to bring awareness.
Well, the thing
awareness.
Is that, like, it's people, what people don't understand is that actors with hearts can play characters without hearts, but it's very difficult for actors without hearts to play characters with hearts.
Right.
And that's why it's like, that's why it's only fair to cast an actor who doesn't. This is one of the only roles they'll ever be able to play.
They're taking back the word Tin Man to describe themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we actually should say T word. They say
T.
The actual T word, which I don't want to say out loud, but that is.
Right, right. Feel, like, okay, I love it. What do you think?
I'm in.
Okay, great. Nice job, guys. Limitless 2, or you have a different title?
Limit, period, less.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, you heard him.
That's limit,
because you
less.
Can sit, people will sit, it'll just get people talking.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. All right, guys, thank you so much for coming. I had a great time. Is there anything you guys want to plug or tell people about or anything of that sort?
I guess I'd, you know, see Limit.less in theaters. It's opening, we're hoping for February 2021.
Yeah.
No, well,
if Incredibles 4, well, that's. Yeah.
Do you have anything to plug, Healy?
No. Thank Tegan. It was cool to meet a neuroscientist. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Cool hanging out with you guys.
Distracting from the important science. Doing what we do best.
Well, you gotta give people both. Or else they start to tune out.
A little sugar with your pill.
Yeah, exactly. A little peanut butter with your
Adderall.
Yeah, with your Metzadaisy or what was it?
Modafinil, that was close.
Modafinil, it was a different flower. Yeah. I'm such a schmuck. All right, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being here. We'll see you next time. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show for behind the scenes, photos, videos, and games. And also, please feel free to send us an email, badscience@seeker.com. You can request a movie we can do or tell me what a bad job I'm doing and things that I missed. That's cool too. I'll write you back. Again, that's badscience@seeker.com, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.